Welcome back to House of Cards once again. Roberto, I'm super excited. Are you?
I am too, but there seems to be a weird glassed man here.
Yes!
He seems to be bearded and has a very, very fancy background. Who is this strange man that joins us today?
He is one Mr. Tom Merritt. Tom Merritt, thank you so much.
I'm just a podcaster, you guys. Nothing
Tomas
special.
Tomas Merritt. So glad to have you on. It's super exciting to have you here on the House of Cards show, Tom.
Hey,
I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. So what we're going to do very quickly, Tom, is just sort of jump into what is it about House of Cards? I know you've watched it because... You know, I do watch Cord Killers every day live, or every Monday when you record live. Did you finish season four?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, unlike last season, with season four, Eileen and I just blazed through it in a weekend. Mm. We were so caught up in the fight between Claire and Frank at the beginning that we made it right to episode 6 in the first night. And then, you know, we just kind of trickled it out over the rest of the weekend. But this is probably the best season for me since season 1.
Well, that answers another question I had for you. and you've also watched the UK show all the way through the end, right?
I haven't watched it all the way through the end. I've only seen a couple of those episodes, and just because I felt like I had to for comparison purposes. But I do want to go back and finish it because it looks amazing.
Sure. And
I'm done with this,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'd say when I'm done with the season, I'm probably gonna do the same. Like the hardest part is I approach this show watching it episode per episode, but. It's becoming apparent as I watch each episode that's like, I think this is meant to be binged, and I don't know how I feel about that, but it feels like the show is written in a way of like, no, you kind of need to watch this in maybe not one sitting like over a weekend, but maybe like, you know, 3 to 4 succinct sessions where you just sort of take an hour each time, you know, 2 hours each time and sort of just power through it each day. It feels very UK like that, because I know the UK, like, you know, tends to have these hour-long blocks of episodes and things like that.
Well, and they do less hand-holding, I notice, in both Amazon, Netflix, all of these binge type of programs. They're not worried about you forgetting from 1 week to the next because they know that you control when you watch it.
So how do you feel? Well, I guess we know now what your favorite seasons are. But do you think that there's one of them all, which one stands out the most? Is it still season one?
Yeah, it's still season one because we were getting to know Frank and he was entirely an underdog. So he could just be whatever he wanted to be and whatever he needed to be. And so you were constantly watching him manipulate things from the background. I think that's one of the fascinating bits of House of Cards is their cinema verite, and only those who really actually work in politics know for sure. But from what I've heard, a lot of what happens is a caricaturized version of things that really do happen. And so that was the fascinating bit, is seeing like, well, how could this member of the House of Representatives have so much influence? What really goes on behind the scenes? Once he became president, it actually took away one of the big motivators for him. So they have to work harder to give him the motivation to do the things that Frank Underwood does. So that's why I think season one's still the best for me, because that's all ahead of him at that point.
Yeah. The way I always word it was, you know, heaven help us if Frank becomes president, because there's nothing higher. And Frank's character has always been sort of getting to the next, you know, next point, getting to the, you know, being better, being this. There ain't anything higher than president. And so, you know, I was about the same way. Like, for me, it was season two that I loved the most, just because it kicked off so darn strong, you know, and maybe that's what I liked about it, was that it just had this thump of a way of getting you back in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. With Zoe's death right at the beginning, you just thought, oh, well, season two, it's just not going to stop. It's going to end.
Yeah, it started strong, for sure.
It just kind of... Maybe that was their fault, is starting so strong, right? But
yeah, it depends on what kind of viewer you are, though. If it starts in a certain way, you might expect it to keep that pace up all season, and that's difficult to do.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
kind of one of the things I like about this season, about season four, is that it maintains its energy through the first several episodes.
That's what I've been noticing is ultimately it's keeping the pace that it's set. There may be those episodes where I don't think are the greatest, but they do seem to be keeping at least somewhat of a rhythm. At least, you know, because again, like the way I've ordered it is that when House of Cards has something happen, something major happens. When nothing happens, though, nothing really happens in an episode. But they at least keep a rhythm of at least, you know, keeping certain B lines and certain, you know, C lines kind of going through the series, and of course, you know, your main A lines kind of just following through. But yeah, I would definitely say so far, especially this episode that we're going to talk about today, may be the kicking off of like the season I've been wanting to see in House of Cards for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually going to be interesting now that, you know, I think everyone, at least last year, expected this has to be the last season if you compare it with the UK show and how long it ran. But now we're going a little bit further, and it's kind of interesting that Bo Williams, the creator, who was the showrunner, is out. So it's going to be, will it be a completely different show? And I know that's not a question you can answer, Tom, but do you kind of have any thoughts on how are they going to continue the story on? Is Conway going to become the new Frank?
That's a really good question. I wonder if Bo Williams is stepping away because he had a vision for following a U.S. version of the U.K. story, and that vision is now wrapped up. So he's like, yeah, you know, you guys go ahead, man. If you got more story to tell, tell it. I don't. Mm-hmm. That feels like what might be the case here. And so it's dangerous. It could be brilliant. They might be able to go in a direction that becomes something fantastic. Maybe Frank gets reelected. You know, I mean, obviously we're going to want to see the election campaign come to its fruition and all of that. But I want to know what you do with Frank Underwood, because again, what we did all the way here was say, well, Frank wants to be president. Okay, we made him president, so now the stakes are higher. We'll do foreign affairs. You know, we'll pull pieces from every presidency. We'll have a little Watergate here, a little Ford assassination attempt here. Well, you know, like, I don't know what's left because second-term presidents are boring. and I can't think of any, like, really fascinating, relevant presidential events that they haven't touched on already.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. How many more times can they bring in FDR and Eleanor, you know, or Clinton and Hillary?
I mean, we're going to go back and do a teapot dome scandal or
look, I at this point, I it's so funny for me because like there are always two sides of me whenever I look at any kind of media, especially when it comes to commercial media. There's a side that knows what a writer may intend and what a studio, you know, what a team may intend. And then there's a side that says, yeah, but we gave you a whole bunch of money as a studio, and we want that money back. And you know, you know, like I was making a joke during the pre-show about Game of Thrones, how that's going on now without even any writing by you know George R. R. Martin, and it's the idea of like, well, I got nothing ready to go. It's like, well, you better, because we signed these contracts and we want to make that money. And part of me gets worried about that being with House of Cards, just the idea of like, well, this is hot now. We want a sixth and seventh season, you know, we want a seventh and eighth season now. And that's why we have a new front runner, so that we can have those sixth, seventh, and eighth seasons. Not so that, you know, you don't hire somebody new at their end.
I don't know how I would feel if Conway took over the story. I mean, I obviously don't think they ever get rid of Frank, but it's not as interesting if Frank is either an ex-president or is the president having to deal with the young Frank coming at him. I'm not sure.
Yep. Like I said, I don't. We'll find out. But before we talk about this week's episode, we got to thank a sponsor. Actually,
yeah,
I think two sponsors.
Bigger Powers supporting creative ventures. Yeah, go for it, Roberto.
Yeah, we got to talk about our first one, which is 100TB.com. This is for you U.S. people, too. But if you are in the U.S. and you're looking for a very, very awesome host provider providing you with, you know, VPSs, like really decent costing servers, especially like bare metal ones, head over to 100TB.com. They're actually pretty amazing for their cost, especially if you start looking at how much hosting truly costs. And when I might say hosting, I don't mean like shared hosting. I mean things that, you know, power things like Facebook, power things like, you know, like what we're doing right now. Head on over to 100TB.com. We also have a new one, which I hadn't really kind of looked into too much, but I think I know what it is because it's really not a sponsor per se, but it's something that if only we had the writer here to talk about this whole thing, this Pilot X. Do you know about this, Tom? This Pilot X at all?
Yeah, I kind of know about it because I wrote it. it's really nice of you guys to throw that in there as well. It's my Inkshares book. And if anybody hasn't heard about Inkshares, it's kind of like a Kickstarter for novels. Basically what they do is they say, we're going to be a real publisher, but we need enough people to pre-order your book to publish it. So instead of looking through slush piles, they leave it up to the audience. So if I can get 750 people to pre-order my book, Pilot X, it will get published. And it's a science fiction novel about a time-traveling pilot who just wants to tool around in his spaceship. But he is from a race that considers itself the guardians of the timeline, and he gets pulled into a big dimensional war, and he may be the only one who can save the universe. So kind of sucks for him.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks, Tom.
I was actually going to right now pre-order on the air, but I realized I left my credit card over
and
in
then
the
I would have
That's
to
okay. I appreciate the thought.
And I'm not Bryce, so I can't.
It's okay. It's fine. But for sure, if you want to read some amazing fiction by Mr. Tom Merritt here, who's an amazing writer and friend of the show, head on over. We'll put the link in the show notes. Yep. That way y'all can pre-order the copy, because I was going to do it right now, but I literally left the other card in my room, and I'll do that after the show's done.
Right. Excellent.
But let us talk about this episode.
Yeah.
Let us, especially because of all the crazy stuff. What I like about House of Cards, you mentioned this at the beginning, that it always kind of reflects our world. I'm always very cautious of saying it is our world, because it's still a work of fiction. But this touched home in a weird, weird way this episode, Tom, specifically with the idea of Data being the thing that won the election, or that would win the election.
Well, yeah, you're talking about the polyhop stuff.
Yep.
And the idea of getting trans. I go back and forth on this particular plot device, because part of me loves the idea that they are bringing in the Data trend piece, which is very, very real. It was real 4 years ago, and it's even more of a driver of things in this particular election. And yet, one of the things I've loved about House of Cards is that they always pull their stuff from real. Like, they don't cover up the Apple logos. They use, the typical phones that people would use. So I'm curious why they had to go Polyhop and not Bing or Google.
I'll tell you why, Tom. It's a very easy answer. With I would imagine Bing would have been one, but part of me thinks that there have been someone saying, well, yeah, but Bing's not that hot.
Yeah, and Polyhop is even less hot. Like, they admit that in the plot. Like, here's the thing you've never heard of because it's not real. Also, it's not very popular, but he's still getting great info out of it.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm splitting hairs of the idea of, like, well, you know, maybe they didn't pay the right money licenses for stuff, but you're absolutely right, because they do a really good job. And you could argue that a lot of that is product placement sometimes.
Like, Brunetti came on Court Killers and said it's not product placement.
Is it
Apple
not?
Stuff
okay,
is
well.
Not product placement. He obviously left it open that there might be other product placement considerations out there, but the device stuff isn't.
Interesting. Well, then I'm wondering. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a deal that Netflix doesn't want. I don't know, there could be a multitude of reasons, but you're absolutely right. That's actually, I didn't even realize that, because part of me always thinks that anytime I see a product, it's like, well, they got a deal from Apple, or they got permission from X, Y, or Z, and that kind of thing. I mean,
I'm not ruling that out, that they wanted to do it here. I think it's probably more likely that they just wanted to avoid entanglements. They
probably
didn't want Google or Microsoft or Ask or somebody coming at them saying, I know this is a work of fiction, but you're implying that we do horrible things.
And I think I think by having it be this sort of secondary this company that doesn't exist, this Polyhop, is that you get to talk about sort of the reality of searches. No one really thinks about how big analytical data on a search engine is. No one quite thinks about that. There's a good quote that Frank says, you know, as he's walking through the office, you know, talking about the gun and things like that, where he's talking about how just by knowing your search results, and this is, again, a person that's not necessarily technically minded. I wouldn't say Frank is a computer science guy. But he's talking about, you know, if you think about all the things you search, you know, at any given point in time, and having a search engine know what your hopes, your desires, your dreams, what you're thinking, why you're thinking it, and what you're trying to find, and then being able to take that data and sell it to a presidential candidate that knows then how to word the things that you want to hear. I mean, it's frightening, but that's what we give all these, you know, engines. That's what happens when you sign up for, you know, Gmail. You know, it's always scanning your email for all this kind of data points, and no one really thinks of how valuable that is.
I wish they'd made it Hooli, just partnered with Silicon Valley.
Definitely. But that's like, I mean, that's what I liked about this was that whole angle, because it felt like a real angle.
I definitely feel like they do it fairly well. They somewhat oversell what this kind of a data analysis is capable of doing these days, but not by much. Like, this stuff is really powerful, and I get why they oversold it, because they didn't want to get into the minutia of data mining and how you pull out trends. And so they just kind of, I don't want to say glossed it over, because that sounds dismissive. I think they simplified it. Which, if you're a political junkie watching this, I'm sure you feel the same way about a lot of the political maneuverings that they do, because they don't want to get into the tediousness that does come behind a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're still pushing a story at the end of the day. They're still pushing absolutely a piece of fiction, you know.
Yeah.
Go for it, Jackie.
So my question is about Frank. Frank now is kind of conflicted, and he's getting, you know, he's got Stamper on one side, and then he's got Leanne, who is now Claire Stamper, as we call her. And they're both got these differing views on the action, Plan A or Plan B. Frank is reluctant to use the power of the NSA, even though they're trying to get the court approval. Do you guys really think that Frank is really reluctant? That kind of shocks me, because if the character is supposed to be what we think of him as using everything to his complete resources, can you guys explain to me why he's reluctant? I know it could kill him, and I know he's pointing to Nixon and saying, well, this is something even you would have done, which I liked, because I like that connection.
I think ultimately the reason why is because it's Plan B, because it is the last card in the hand. In other words, you can do the NSA, you pull all that information. If somebody, anybody catches wind of this, it's all over. You know, there's no way to save this at that point. It is like, you used what for what now? And you gathered it how? And you did what, you know, you did what to the American people? You know, like, that's a, I mean, like, you talk about our real world. When the whole Snowden thing happened, we all, you know, that became a news cycle for an entire, like, end of the year. And in this world, that is Frank's, like, last pin. Like, in other words, if he throws that grenade, it better hit, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's it. He sees it as risk. I don't think it's an ethical thing. I think Frank, if he thought he could get away with it 100%, he would do it. But he looks at this, and I think that scene where he's talking about Nixon is very telling, where he's saying, you would have done this, and guess what? You got caught and had to resign. So that's the object lesson that Frank's looking at, not the ethics of it, not whether it's moral, just, you know, this is a really risky move. And here's the thing. He is so driven by practicality that he hasn't ruled it out. He hasn't said, oh, no, we absolutely shouldn't do that ever. He's like, wow, that's a really risky one. We could really get burned by that. So let's hold that as Plan B.
Let's put that in, you know, put that in the holster, so to speak, because it's a cool plan. I mean, it's such a fun. I mean, yes, is it horrible in terms of, like, the real world? Of course. But as a interesting part of the fiction world, the idea of, like, yeah, let's just let the NSA do. I love the way that when they talk to the guy at the NSA, it's like, any experiment you ever wanted to test, now's the time. You have carte blanche to do it all. And just the idea of, like, every bit of data mining you've ever wanted to do, you know, now is the time to be able to do that. It's just like, such a scary thing to pull all of the, you know, we're talking, you know, if Polyhop in the series is sort of the Google, if you will, or the Bing, this, the NSA would be this just ginormous data sets to scan over of everything, not just, you know.
Also, it's probably more data than they could really mine.
Probably, but, you know.
In the time frame that they need, anyway.
For sure. I mean, but the idea being that, you know, you have this, you know, it'd be like, here's the tugboat that is Polyhop, and then here's the Lusitania that is the NSA, and it's that pin that, like, I'm with you, it's like not ethics, it's just a matter of, will I get caught? Will it really burn me if I get caught? Is there a way that I can make sure I don't get caught? I mean, because, you know, the always a phrase I've said is that at this point in time, Frank's got two kills under his belt that no one really knows about. You know, he's very much thinking of things like that.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, any kind of final thoughts on this episode in particular? You know, because again, this is a big change. Or did any of the previous episodes of this season? We had a very bizarre Frank hallucinations. Any funny final thoughts?
Yeah, I did feel like the hallucinations were sort of, well, we can't waste Kevin Spacey, so let's figure out a way to get him in there. But they weren't entirely gratuitous. I mean, they were definitely showing his internal monologue. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure they were 100% necessary.
But I dug it for sure.
Okay, well, let's see. That's why.
Because I dug it because it was like, here is Frank's. You know, the common thread that I've said throughout this entire show and the entire all three seasons has been, we're not following the protagonist of the story. We're following the antagonist of the story. We're following the villain, if you will. You know, that's our main lead is from the evil Frank Underwood, but not maniacal. It's just that's sort of how villains are. You never really can tell they're a villain in the real world. But what I liked about this episode, that episode specifically, that one is that if Frank dies, you know, there are two very, very angry spirits that are just ready and waiting to take him down to his, you know, final resting place. Because there's a line that I think it's who is it that says it, Jackie, where it's like, we have all the time in the world, Frank, you know.
I think that was Russo, yeah.
Russo at that point, and it's just like, yeah, this is Frank's, you know, literal hell. You know, there's no metaphor, there's no this. This is where he goes at the end of it all. You know, he doesn't come, you know, he doesn't go to heaven. Frank goes to hell at the end of it all. And it was like the most rewarding thing to see. So I'm like, they finally set that pin in, you know, that in the stone of like, Frank doesn't gain forgiveness at the end of all this. He's only got one place he goes at the end. That's why I dug the heck out of that for that reason.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like these episodes, not seven worst of all, but these episodes are where things started to slow down again. And I think it was because they wanted to ramp back into this old story starting to resurface, the where the bodies are buried. And so it takes a couple episodes for us to shift from the Claire anger shooting bits to this. If anything, the hallucinations bits sort of emphasize that we were in a holding pattern with Frank, and Frank is the driver of this story. So it's good to see him back, finally, and starting to do things.
For sure. I completely agree for you on that one, Tom.
Well, thank you, Tom, so much for joining us. This has been a delight. And so is there, where can people, everyone knows where to find you, but where can
people find you? That's not true. If you want to find out what I'm up to, dailytechnewsshow.com is my main gig. It's Monday through Friday about tech news, or tommerritt.com. That's where you can find links to Pilot X on Inkshares. You can find all the other shows I do, like Sword and Laser, which is science fiction and fantasy book podcast, Current Geek, et cetera. Tom Merritt, two R's, two T's, tommerritt.com.
Excellent. And one last thing, that we could plug for you. I'm trying to pull out everything. There is a thing called the Podcast Awards, and a lot of us are getting really active and not making sure we nominate great shows like 8-Bit Life on CosmicRadio.tv. Of course, Cord Killers, I got to mention. And, you know, can you guys think of any other podcasts that we missed out, Current Geek? all the British Tech Network episodes.
I mean, I'm trying to think what's left. I mean, it's funny because every time I look at Tom's background, I see the piece of Lucite and everything just staring back at me, you know, taunting me and saying, you know, you could have.
Oh, now I feel bad. I would take it down.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Tom. It's just I always see it in the background. It's just like, yeah, there it is. You know, if you're curious, you know, maybe Tom will be nice and just use his finger to indicate the thing in the background that is the podcast. Award that he has, I think, for Daily Tech News. It's a record, actually, surprisingly. No, it's not. It's that piece. No, it's okay. No, I always, yeah, because you know, there are plenty of podcasts out there. You know, mine's one of them for sure. But, you know, anything here at the British Tech Network, there's so many things that are going on that easily could be done.
So many categories, and yet there's so many great podcasts. It's kind of a challenge to pick yours to nominate. And nominations do end on the 30th. But you can submit a nomination once per email. You sign in with your email and you can nominate. So that's the trick. And then afterwards, you know, make sure you follow up and vote for your favorites.
We will come back if any of our podcasts are nominated and probably pitching through our respective audiences.
And if not, we won't mention it.
I will. Tom may not. Tom already has one. So he may not nominate.
Well, yeah, and last year's – the thing to remember is last year's winners are not allowed to be nominated this year.
Right.
So Daily Tech News Show won last year. We're good. We're fine. We got ours.
We'd like another award flanking the other side of the shot. Maybe even
British Tech Network has some good stuff too.
I'm just saying, Tom wouldn't mind the other side to have.
See, if Corn Killers gets one though, then it goes to Brian's house.
Oh, that's right.
He's got the headquarters.
That's right. That's a good point. I mean, I guess that's fair, even better, because then
I think CosmicRadio.tv's 8-bit life deserves one.
But you know, it's gauche to say that your podcast deserves one.
That's why I said it for you.
Thank you so much, Tom. Well, I think that's it. We also, of course, if you want to support the British Tech Network, we also have a Patreon going on as well. I think it's British Tech Network. I think it's patreon.com/British Tech Network, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So definitely help support that out, because that always helps find any financial things. As much as we love awards and stuff like that, financial is what keeps everything kind of going, from servers to, you know, bandwidth to all that stuff. So any help there is vastly appreciated.
I feel like the odd kid out. I'm the only one here without a Patreon, even though I'm working on it for puppets. But so, and then there's also one for Cosmic Radio TV, of course.
Correct.
And, you know, and DTNS.
Sure.
So yeah. Patreon is the new podcasting. Podcasting is the new orange, or the new black, or the new orange. I don't know how it goes.
I think we've ran this promotional train to the last stop, Jackie.
Where can people find you, Roberto?
Oh, I'm easy to find. I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitters. And if you want to check out anything I do, other podcasting, like mentioned, head to Cosmic Radio TV and check out 8-Bit Life, Jump Point, whatever else is on there. I'm typically doing my thing there.
Excellent. And I'm Jackie Herring. Follow me at JackieHerring81 on Twitter. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Bye.